Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Mike! Mike, do you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Are there any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. 6... 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show. America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Oh, yes. Here we are. Guy James, your host, Guy James, for the Guy James Show, along with music director Billy Shears today. Glad to have all of you along with us today on this momentous day. Yes, you know what I'm talking about. I'm talking about that huge, monstrous, all-important speech that Mr. Bush is going to give tonight. I know that the entire nation is waiting with bated breath, whatever the hell bated breath is. We've got it, and we're waiting for it. Frankly, I'm not going to watch. I've already got a text of the speech. And I do want to tell you this. Tomorrow, we're going to talk about it in depth. We're going to have Professor John Quigley, professor of law at Ohio State University, on, and we're going to talk about Junior's authority, his legal authority to escalate this war. We shall see. It's going to be an interesting discussion. I sure hope. Just a little later on, toward the bottom of this hour, we're going to have Antonia Juhatz. She's a visiting scholar at the Institute of Policy Studies, and we're going to talk about this oil business going on over in Iraq right now that so many of you have read about, this new law they're trying to pass in Iraq. She's got all the skinny on it, and you won't believe it. You won't believe it. It's one of the more shocking in-your-face things that the Bush administration's tried to do, and they most likely will get away with it. So, do stick around for that. We will have her along, like I said, around 3:25 today. And then in the second hour, we're going to have Rick Benrubi, who is with the Florida Justice Association, and we're going to talk about this huge ripoff of consumers by the insurance industry. So hopefully we'll have a couple of great dialogues there. Of course, we'd like to have you call 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254. Did you ever have one of those days that, if you don't do a show, you wouldn't know what I'm talking about. Other than the guess that you didn't know what the hell you were going to talk about all day long. I spent a long time preparing for this show, and all of a sudden I'm going, oh, I don't know. And yes, to answer all of your emails, I am still smarting over the football game on Monday night. It's going to take a while. It's going to take a few days. Spoke to my brother today. We didn't talk about it. We didn't call. He lives in Phoenix. We didn't talk about it yesterday. We didn't even call because we both knew how the other felt and wouldn't want to talk about it too much. So we waited till today. and we hashed it out this morning, and he feels exactly the same way as I do about it, that we got beaten by a much better team. And if any of you are Ohio State fans and you disagree with that, why, go ahead. I showed what I knew about college football on Monday night by predicting a big win for the Buckeyes, so there you go. Anyway, enough football talk. I'd like to thank Tosh. And Tosh, you know who you are. I'd like to thank you for a very nice email. He mentioned the football game in there, but he didn't rub it in. And, of course, let's see, I mentioned about the good guest today. The Congress, Nancy, she's doing it. She's getting it done. She's that first 100 hours. And do be advised, they didn't mean 100 straight hours. They're keeping a time clock on it, you know, a stopwatch. And they mean 100 hours altogether. And they got the ethics reform passed already. And working on the minimum wage this afternoon. I'm not sure how that's going right now. But hopefully it'll go all right. You know, I was thinking about this today. Here the Democratic Congress comes in and just starts ripping away at things in Congress that needed to be done. You know, the ethics package, as far as I'm concerned, didn't go far enough. Certainly the minimum wage isn't far enough at $7.25. I don't think you can live at $7.25. I don't think you could support one person on $7.25 an hour, 40 hours a week, could you? I don't see how. You couldn't live in around here. You couldn't. Well, you can't rent a. You can barely rent a room around here for less than about $800 a month. So, you know, what are you going to do with all the. I mean, it's a tougher road to hoe, try to get by on that. Really, it is. But, you know, the Democrats, right away, they jump right out of the chute and they start working on important issues, the issues that they said they would work on. And they do it because we're Democrats. They're Democrats. We don't always see eye to eye. But how many times have I seen this happen in my lifetime where the Democrats take over and, you know, start getting things done that should have been done a long, long time ago. And we'll talk about that in just a little while. Let's go to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Guy, it's Sarge. How you doing?
Hi, Sarge.
Well, I feel bad about your Ohio State Buckeyes, man.
Oh, man, went down in flames.
I hate to see that. I even went as far as to eat a Buckeye that Elo sent me. A Buckeye candy, that is.
Yeah, Buckeye candy, okay.
And it still didn't do y'all any good. But well, we did get rid of Ohio for you.
Yeah, well.
The Golden Eagles got rid of Ohio.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, this speech tonight, I'm not even seeing why he's bothering. Because
no.
Everybody knows what he wants, and everybody knows it's just a big old humongous screw up, and the only thing that's left to be seen is if anybody's got the guts enough to stand up and say, uh-uh.
That's exactly right. There's nothing new in it. I've seen it. There's nothing new in it at all. The Republicans are touting the fact, well, he's going to throw in the money there for the jobs for the Iraqis. Well, first of all, we better keep the money right here for jobs in America, especially down where you live. And secondly, jobs. We've spent how many billion dollars on construction over there with Halliburton and all that? Why the hell didn't they provide jobs?
Yeah,
it just didn't work out. They sucked all the money out, brought it back here, left the Iraqis with nothing, and now they're going to throw them a few crumbs and say, "Oh, look what we did for you." No,
well, you want to know where that money is coming from for those jobs in Iraq? They're coming from things like Katrina recovery. They're coming from things like social programs. That's where they're coming from. They're coming out of our people's rear end.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's you know, we've got buku problems here in this country where it needs all kind of money thrown at it, and yeah. Everything down where you live, the infrastructure, homes, jobs, social programs, everything that you can possibly name.
Well, let me give you an example how it's affecting us. Jim Yancey, several months ago, put in a grant For the Jackson County Community Services Coalition, we are getting our organization, we're collecting stuff for them to get. We're going to take it down there on the Valentine's Day. But, and you can go to unreportednews.net for more info on that. But now, Jim put in that grant, and he had it turned down. And now here's the reason they turned it down. Duplication of services.
Oh.
Now, what they mean by that is, from what I understand, is what they're saying is that they have funded organizations to do that same work, and even though those organizations haven't done that work, they have got to do it, and they're not going to fund Jim to make sure it gets done.
Yeah. Well, that duplication of services.
I mean, it's stupid when you stop and think about it, but yet what it serves two functions. Number one, it gives them more money to throw into Iraq. Number two, it also achieves a goal of getting rid of certain people down on the Mississippi coast, Louisiana coast, New Orleans, because they want them out of there. They don't fit into the goal of making making it a tourist mecca.
Yeah, exactly,
and
right.
We have a form of genocide going on right here, and it's like Jim Yancey has said, they say a five-year program. We don't have 5 years. We don't have 2 years. We make it in a year and a half to 2 years, but anything more than that is being just plain ignorant or plain apathetic about the people who are barely hanging on by a string right now. In fact, I'd say right as we're talking, there's probably somebody on the Mississippi coast dying because of the poor job that these people are doing.
Well, it'd be different. It'd be different if someone could look down through the tunnel and see a little light at the end of it. A lot of the folks, and I've, you know, through you and through a lot of folks, done a lot of study on the situation there. And for so many people, there's no hope. There's nothing waiting for them. There's nothing dangling out there that in a month or 2 months or 3 months is going to come up for them to help me improve their lives. There's nothing there.
Mm-mm. There's not, and it's in. That's why I'd like for you to get Jim Yancey on sometime, because you would really, I mean, you've got a grasp of what's going on. But when you hear Jim talk, because he's with it every day, he sees the actual things, you know, and he's working to get rid of these problems. So, you know, he sees things that you and I wouldn't even dream of.
Sure.
And it's just really discouraging when a man's busting his tail. This man, I have called him early in the morning, and he's been out in the field working. I'll call him on his cell phone, and he'll be out in the field working. I've called him that same evening at 9 o'clock at night, and he's still out there working. And this is a man that's given 6-7 days a week to this, mm-hmm. and given all kind of hours, and yet they refuse to fund him, but yet they'll fund this old rat butt that they're funding, and he's only getting about 20-30% of the money down into the area.
Well, Sarge, you know, I hate to say it, but, and I do hate to say it, it makes me ashamed, but it's time for a lot of people in your area and all over the country, those that are doing without, the have-nots, it's time for them to understand that the Bush administration and, by and large, the United States government really doesn't care about them.
Well, you know, that's what Jim Yancey said on Mike Malloy's show. Mike asked him, what if the government doesn't come and help? And he said, well, Mike, I hate to say this, but the people around here have given up on the government. We've given up on them.
Well, why not? You know, the government's good for two things. The government's good to have a military in order to protect us. And it's good for things like the Katrina disaster and when it happened over in Hurricane Andrew. And it's good for things like that. That's about all government's good for. And when they totally ignore one, the, you know, a terribly important function like this now, it boils down to the politicians, most of them, just don't give a damn about people. They don't.
Now here comes the really zonker to the whole thing. Okay, Bush is going to throw in that jobs program as doing something for the Iraqi people. Now tell me something, guy. How is Bush going to do anything for those people in Iraq when he can't even do anything for the people on the Mississippi and Louisiana coast?
Well, there's, what, 25 million people there. I don't know what percentage of them are adults. I would say, you know, maybe half of them or less than half of them are adults. Train them for what jobs?
Yeah.
They're number one import, and we're going to talk about it in about 10 minutes with our expert today. Their number one moneymaker in that nation is oil.
Well, I'm gonna hang up, but before I do, let me encourage everybody to go to the Head on Radio Network page, front page, or go to unreportednews.net. By the way, I have some pictures from New Orleans up on my column for today. And make a donation if you can. If you got some goods, contact one of us, and we'll try and get it set up where you can get it to us. Or if nothing else, just send Jim an email letting him know that you care.
Sarge, have you allowed yourself enough time with this Valentine's Day? I mean, it's only a month away.
Yeah, it's looking really good.
Okay.
Sean went out yesterday in the truck, and he collected everything that he could with the time that he had the truck. And he still had stops he wasn't able to get to, so he had to get to them next week. So people are really, really chiming in. Cassie and Betsy and Michelle have got something going on in Texas that's looking pretty good from what I understand, and we're trying to help get them a truck and a driver to get the stuff here. But all in all, it's really working out good.
Well, good, good. That's good to hear. That's good to hear. We hope it's a big success.
Well, thank you, and take care.
Thanks, Sergeant. We'll set up something with Yancey as soon as we can. That's something I've been neglecting. I've been kind of swamped with things. But
well, I tell you what, man, you'll be surprised because, like I said, I talk to the man every other day, and every day he hits me with something new that I never even thought about.
Sure.
So, you know, it's something. Okay, guy, thank you a lot, buddy.
Thanks, Sarge.
Bye-bye.
I believe in helping people, and I believe in extending a hand, a friendship, and support wherever you can around the world. I firmly believe in it. No matter where the situation might be, where our brothers and sisters from around the world need help, I believe that we should extend that hand. But first and foremost, before we can do that, we have to take care of our brothers and sisters here at home. And we've got hundreds of thousands of people down in that area that are not being taken care of. And it's a crying shame. Many, many programs in this country need help. They've scuttled so many social programs that were important to folks who didn't have enough to send their kids to daycare, to even feed their kids, to make sure that the kids after school had something to do. You know, they've scuttled one social program after another. And I'm not saying we need to go back to the Great Society where we're throwing money and wasting a lot of money, which has happened. But we need to go back to responsible government and compassionate government. And it can be compassionate and responsible at the same time. And it's just mismanagement. That's the only thing. The bureaucracies get so big that the people at the top don't know what's going on at the bottom. And we've seen that happen over and over and over again. Government waste. Our government could be run so much more efficiently. From top to bottom. We've seen that in the military, most especially in the military, because that's the biggest chunk of our budget. Some, what, $550 billion this year, plus the others that'll be tacked onto it here very shortly. A lot of waste, a lot of fraud, just many, many things that we could do to spend our money more wisely. But down where Sarge lives, that whole area down there, I don't think people understand. I you know, once it's off the news, once Geraldo's not there anymore, once the Fox News trailer pulls out, once Once the MSNBC crew pulls out, it's over with as far as the public is concerned. And that's a fact. How much, you know how that goes in the news. How much have you heard about those people that died up on the mountain here a while back since the news people pulled out? You haven't heard anything, have you? Not that that was a huge story, nor should it have been, but that's just the way it is. We're, we just got to have it all right now. And that's the way our society functions, I guess. 866-546-5254. I have news for you. PNAC. They're closing it down. They're closing down PNAC, and the way I hear it, there's nothing left but a voicemail box and what's left of the website. They've got one single employee left to wrap things up. And the way they explain it is, you know, it's a project for a new American century. It was there to project American power and influence around the world. And they might think that they've projected all that they can right now, the William Crystals and the people involved in that situation. The signatories on PNAC, George Bush, Dick Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld, Paul Wolfowitz, Elliot Abrams, Louis Libby, Norm Podhertz, and Frank Gaffney, and a host of others. I believe even Jebby Bush is in on it. These people have wielded their influence and done a great disservice to the people of the United States by getting us involved in the war. Make no mistake about it. It was the influence of PNAC that ultimately put us in this morass that is the Junior Bush War. Make no mistake about it. No PNAC group, no Iraq War. It wouldn't have come to fruition. They shot for it early on. They lobbied old man Bush. They lobbied Bill Clinton. And only Junior was dumb enough, gullible enough, malleable enough to go ahead and do their bidding. And so now they're going to shut it down. And it infuriates me that I see Time Magazine has hired Bill Kristol part-time as a part-time writer for Time Magazine. What the hell has Bill Kristol got to say that's worth anything that the American public would want to hear about? He was wrong on everything that he predicted for the Iraq War. Somewhere here, I think maybe later on the show today, I'll go through a few of the things that Bill Kristol predicted would happen in the Iraq War, the Bush War. And he was dead wrong on not a few of the issues, not a couple of the issues. He was dead wrong on every one of them. I don't mean a little bit wrong. I mean in outer space wrong on everything. As has been the PNAC group, you take your Cheney, your Rumsfeld. What good decisions have they made on the Bush War? There haven't been any good decisions made on the Bush War. And you know what? You're not going to hear any good decisions tonight either. That much I promise you. By now, most of you know what's in that speech. I saw what was in that speech this morning. There's nothing new. There's nothing positive. There's nothing that's going to make one damn bit of difference at all. Not going to make any difference at all. Nothing. It's just another way of playing politics for George Bush trying to save his legacy. That's what it's about. That's all it's about. Here we go again. And you know what? He'll probably get a little bounce in the polls tonight because a lot of the fools sitting at home that have believed him in the past, oh, they'll believe him tonight because it's the president talking and it's Junior Bush. And you know he's a good Christian man and God told him to go over there to Iraq. So let's listen up tonight and he might come up with something good this time. He dug this hole. He put us in this hole. And they think he's going to dig us out of it? Yeah. Hey, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in a minute.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
All right, we're back with the Guy James Show. Welcome back, everybody. And as promised, I have a really great guest with us to explain something that's, well, not as prevalent in the news as it should be, but it's a very important issue and one that when you find out the details about, I know a lot of you are going to be shocked about it. We have Antonia Juhatz with us. She's a visiting scholar at the Institute for Policy Studies, and she wrote the book that we talked about here a while back, The Bush Agenda, Invading the World One Economy at a Time. Antonia, are you with us?
I am. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, very good. I want to talk to you about this issue today of Bush's secret oil plan for Iraq. And I think it's an issue, and I wonder if you agree that not 1% of Americans have any knowledge of it all.
Well, the percentage that have read my book would know about it.
Yes.
And it wouldn't be secret to them. But otherwise, yes, you know, there's my book. There's one opinion piece that I wrote for the Los Angeles Times in December that revealed the oil agenda that the administration is pushing. And other than that, you know, if you didn't read the UK independent newspaper, you probably would have no idea that the Bush administration and U.S. oil companies are, in a very real way from their perspective, about to win the war in Iraq by locking in their access to Iraq's oil.
Absolutely. And we did talk to a gentleman who's been on the show a couple of times, Oh, it's been a little while. Rai Girar.
Yes.
He has talked a little bit about this, but not in detail. And I want, and I know you're scheduled for another appointment here in a short time, so I want to get right to it. Exactly how has the Bush administration schemed and connived to get at the Iraqi oil for the private oil companies here in this country?
Well, basically, beginning before the invasion of Iraq, the Bush administration organized a working group in the State Department that was focused on rewriting Iraq's oil law following the invasion. And then, and the model that that working group in the State Department put forward was a model that is absolutely the utter favorite of the oil industry. And in fact, that working group and the Bush administration itself has, of course, been heavily lobbied by the oil industry on behalf of this law. And the law essentially would maintain the facade of the state of Iraq continuing to control its oil. The government would be the owner of the oil, but every function of the state oil infrastructure would be privatized out to private foreign companies and would be essentially turned over to them with exploration contracts and production contracts and marketing contracts. Basically, the state would bear the risk, but the private companies would get all of the benefit. And that's exactly what they wanted, using a model called production sharing agreements, a type of contract that isn't used anywhere in the Middle East and basically isn't used anywhere where countries have a lot of oil, because it gives an enormous percentage of control and revenue and profit to the private company while denying it to the oil-rich government.
In other words, you say they're going to take the profit out of it. They're going to make the decisions, and if there's any problems with it, that belongs to the state. And I think this would be a good time to mention that, as far as I know, over 90% of the world's oil production is nationalized, that the U.S. is probably the only country in the world with privatized oil production. Am I far off on that?
Absolutely correct, and even more than that, it's actually more like 95% of the world's oil resources are controlled by nationalized oil systems. That just means the government takes ultimate control and responsibility and profit for this most, you know, vital resource in most countries. And the United States, as you say, is the only country with a privatized oil system. And, of course, we've seen the impacts of that system with our ridiculously giant behemoth oil companies that now have incredible undue influence over not only our policymakers but their policy decisions, such as the decision to go to war and continue a war. And essentially, the State Department law, the next step after the invasion was that Paul Bremer, the head of the occupation government of Iraq, appointed one of the members of that State Department working group to be one of the first oil ministers of Iraq. And in that position, he canceled all of the pre-existing contracts that Saddam Hussein had signed with companies from non-U.S. countries, but contracts that couldn't actually be put into place while the sanctions were in place. And so he laid the slate clean.
You're talking about contracts with China and France and Russia?
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. Those contracts. So those are then essentially wiped clean. And then the U.S. appointed first prime minister of Iraq, Ayed Alawi, then introduced essentially this new law. And the new law has been making its way through successive Iraqi governments and hasn't yet, though, been passed or introduced to the parliament. So what we saw in December was first the Iraq Study Group released its report, and its report said, you know, and this is the topic of my Los Angeles Times op-ed, its report said point blank, Iraq is important to the world, and then Iraq is important to the United States because it has the second largest oil reserves in the world. And we need to make sure that the Iraqis pass a new oil law that would essentially privatize Iraq's oil system. And then after that, the president, for the first time, announced publicly that the Iraqis needed to pass this law. U.S. Ambassador to Iraq, Zalmay Khalilzad, said publicly the Iraqis have to pass the law. General Casey said it. the president then announced that he was sending, you know, 20,000 more troops into Iraq, and the pressure was on. The result of all this pressure is that just this week, Prime Minister al-Maliki of Iraq said that he intends to introduce this law to the Iraqi parliament as early as this week.
Let me pause, break in for just a moment.
Sure.
The privatized companies take a monstrous share of the profits and leave the scraps for the nation. And what is the breakdown on that?
Well, what we have seen is that the contracts appear to do two things. First, lock in the contracts for a full 30 years. And within those 30-year contracts, the initial profits are divided such that about 75% of the initial profits from Iraq's oil will go to the private company, leaving Iraq just 25%.
And isn't that somewhere around 90% of their economy or more?
90 to 95% of the economy is governed by oil. So it's devastating, and it's certainly, I mean, basically, the bottom line is it's not a proposal that Iraqis would put forward unless they were occupied by a foreign government, unless they were being essentially forced to do so. It's not, you know, if Iraqis had the opportunity to sit back and figure out, you know, what would be the ideal framework for our oil following the fall of Saddam Hussein, you know, it would be thoroughly unprecedented that they would choose this model.
Am I being cynical here, or wouldn't it be really nice for the private U.S. oil companies to have 20,000 additional American troops there to help guard their oil?
Absolutely. And in fact, the Iraq Study Group said very clearly that U.S. soldiers needed to remain in Iraq, and one of the functions they needed to perform was providing security for the oil infrastructure. And I would, in fact, actually argue that it is actually the full presence of the current, you know, 144,000 troops and now, you know, potentially 164,000 troops that are there because, you know, once the law passes, the oil companies need to sign contracts, but then they need to get to work. And this is a nearly, you know, 200-person strong security force that would be there to protect their interests. Clearly not the Iraqis' interests, as we can see by what's taking place on the ground, but the oil company's interests would be served.
How is Maliki explaining this to the people of Iraq when it's that much of a slice of their economy? It's not going to do anything to pull them out of abject poverty. How is he going to explain this to his people? And I understand that the oil workers are kind of putting up a fuss about it.
Oh, absolutely. Well, so the first answer to that is he's not going to explain it to his people. You know, Iraq is a country in bitter, deadly, daily war. People are busy just trying to, you know, live when crossing the street or going to work. They're trying still after 4 years to get their basic electricity and water and not to have raw sewage flowing down the streets and to get some sort of assistance when one of their members of their families gets sick or is injured. And, you know, as you mentioned, Raed Jarar, an amazing activist with a global exchange and an Iraqi-American, Raed, this should explain the situation with the parliamentarians in Iraq, because those are the people that would vote on this law. Raed received a phone call from parliamentarians in Iraq who he's been working with, who called him and said, Raed, we're being told that unless we pass this oil law, the International Monetary Fund is going to cut off all of our money, and that's so much money that it would be devastating to our economy. Is that true? And then Raed called me and asked me, Antonia, this is what the parliamentarians are asking me. Is it true? And then I responded to him, and then he responded to the parliamentarians, and that's how information is flowing to Iraq's parliamentarians. You know, not I'm proud of my role in it, but that's clearly not how things should be.
And does the U.S. have a hand in this International Monetary Fund cutting off money there if they don't go along with this?
Well, it's not true. It's propaganda that the administration is telling them. So first of all, the International Monetary Fund has required as a condition for its loans to Iraq that they do pass a new oil law. But it hasn't said that it has to be this law. It just said that they need a new sort of modern oil system. Clearly, the pressure of the IMF is to have a more privatized system, but it doesn't have to be this law. And furthermore, the International Monetary Fund is giving Iraq a pittance of money, a couple hundred million. That's nothing, nothing in comparison to the revenues that Iraqis would be denying themselves from their oil by signing this bill. And I think the most important thing right now, as we in the United States enter into a critical, critical opportunity, a moment in time, with the Democrats taking over the House and the Senate, when the country is looking for answers to what should be being done in Iraq, that we make loud and clear that we understand what the agenda of the administration is. It is locking in this oil access, and we refuse to allow our troops to serve that purpose. If we continue more loudly, more impolitely than we have been, to say that, you know, our troops are being used to service this end, there's still an opportunity that it won't happen, that the al-Maliki government won't succeed in passing this law, that the Bush administration won't succeed in passing this law, and that our oil companies don't, you know, reign supreme in Iraq, probably to the ultimate suffering not only of Iraqis, but probably ourselves as well. You know, now's our opportunity to say that this is not going to happen.
Well, it appears to me that if 75% of the profit from their oil revenues goes right out the window to someplace else, that the opportunities for prosperity and democracy that we've heard about from the Bush administration for the Iraqi people is absolutely null and void. There's no way.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. I mean, clearly, there's been a U.S. corporate invasion that has already taken place, which has robbed Iraq really of its reconstruction, and that's the $50 billion that have gone to U.S. companies to utterly fail in reconstruction. Not only that, but that money, all of it was allowed to return to the United States. None of it had to be invested in Iraq. So the Iraqi economy is already torn asunder by the Bush administration's economic policies in Iraq. And now, of course, if they're denied their oil revenue, there's no way that the economy can be sustained. And as you mentioned, the Iraqi oil workers have, the Union of Iraqi Oil Workers have come together and very bravely expressed intense opposition to this policy and this process and the privatization. And, you know, they're taking a stand where other Iraqis have been unable to. Largely, though, their voice has mostly been heard outside of Iraq, where their statements have been shared throughout essentially activist networks. And the trick is to get that information back into Iraq in a way that doesn't risk the safety of the oil workers. And again, that's, you know, a responsibility that we have in the United States through our own alternative media sources, our own resources, to help share information with the Iraqis, but clearly, as you say, not in the interest of the Iraqi people or the Iraqi government.
Well, we'll certainly do what we can. Listen, I know you're booked real close here. I'd like to reserve the right to get you back on again in the next month or so to talk more about this. It's a subject that Americans have to know more about, and we will talk about it. And thank you so much for being on the program today.
Absolutely. I would love to come on again. And let me just throw out there for more information, my website, which is thebushagenda.net.
Good, good. Everybody go there.
Okay.
Thank you, Antonio. Great amount of information in a short amount of time, and well put, and we appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Well, there's something that many of us have said and been saying for 4 years now, that the reason for going to war was the Iraqi oil. Oh, no, 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 it's not the Iraqi oil. Oh, you cynical damn Democrats, you lefties, you liberals, you. How terrible. We're going there to save ourselves from weapons of mass destruction. Oh, he doesn't have any. Well, we're going there to keep him from getting the weapons of mass destruction that he might want. Oh, his program for that wasn't okay. Well, democracy. democracy. You know, we love those Iraqi people. All of us in the Bush administration here, we love the Iraqi people. We've never had any use for Arabs before, but we love the Iraqi people right now, and we're going to go over there and help them out and bring democracy to their country. Never mind that we helped take away what little democracy they had in their country when we helped install Saddam Hussein as the dictator and the all-powerful ruler. Never mind that we provided him with the money and the arms to fight our enemy, the Iranians, and thus giving him the power to run over his own people, to gas the Kurds, and do all these ghastly things that we've heard about him doing. We enabled him to do all that. He would have done none of that without the help of the United States government. And I'm not indicting just the Bush administration. I'm indicting every administration that had anything to do with sending old Donnie Rumsfeld over there to shake his hand and make nice with him and make sure he had all the weapons he ever needed so that he could fight his neighbors. God, do you see the, what's the word I'm looking for? The story is just, you can't write this stuff. You cannot write this stuff that the entire American public put the little flags on their cars, support our troops, and let's kick Saddam's ass and all that. They all went to war willingly. We had Muhammad al-Baradei on this very program. We had Scott Ritter on this very program telling us that the reasons the American government was giving for going in there was nothing but damn lies. And we were excoriated for saying that we were un-American, treasonous, seditionist, all the things that they called us. And all you have to do, believe me, all you have to do is read this Bush's secret oil plan. This is no baloney. It's this new oil plan for Iraq was written by the Iraq Oil Study Group. That's a group of Americans before we fired the first shell in Iraq. They had the capturing of the oil and the taking of the oil and the pumping of the oil and extracting all the profits of it, 75% of it. They had it set up before the first shot was fired in Iraq. And you tell me that they were calling us names for saying we went to Iraq for oil. There are 3,000 dead American troops, and they died for barrels of oil. Nothing else. Nothing else. They're trying to get this law through the Iraqi parliament right now, and thank God, the Iraqi Oil Union, what's left of it, those poor guys, those workers that worked in the Iraqi oil business are looking at this and going, wait a minute. You're signing over 75% of the profits of the Iraqi oil for 30 years? By then, those good old Americans have it all pumped out, won't they? And so when the 30 years is up, there won't be any oil left and no money left. And we'll sit here in poverty like we did before. Folks, that's all this was about. It's all it was ever about. Sometimes some of the things our government does just makes you just flat out ashamed. Just makes you want to hang your head in shame. And this is certainly one of those times. To think that our government, I mean, this is 95% of the Iraqi economy. And we've got Bush sending over 21,500 more troops tonight, 17,500 into Baghdad, and another 4,000 on Anbar province. 4,000 Marines out there to fight Al Qaeda. You know, he had to throw Al Qaeda in there. And did you know, just as an aside, that Al-Qaeda, I'm beginning to, you think you're punch drunk. Did you know You know, the Bush is like Al-Qaeda, Al-Qaeda, Al-Qaeda. Did you think there must be 6 million Al-Qaeda spread all over the world? Do you know that many, many Muslim organizations, several at least, terrorist organizations around the world are far bigger than Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda is nothing. I gotta stop talking for a minute. Let me go to the phone. Let somebody else talk. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, good afternoon, Guy. Bill from Toledo.
Hi, Bill.
Hey, Guy. Just who in the hell do those Iraqis think that oil belongs to?
Yeah, it's under the whole world's oil, right?
When they say it ain't about the oil, it ain't all about the oil, then I guess it's all about the oil.
All about the oil now and forevermore. That's all it ever was.
That was one hell of a guest you just had on.
Well, we'll have her back on. Believe me, she knows what she's talking about. And
that's an hour guest, guys.
Yeah, and one of the most startling things about it, I didn't know before. I've had Raed Girard on this program talking about the oil situation, not this particular oil situation before, and I didn't know that she and he had a connection.
Uh-huh.
And here I find out that he's an expat from Iraq, and he was an exile before, and here I find out that Iraqi parliamentarians are calling Raed Girard to find out what the truth is that's actually in this oil bill that's going before their own parliament because they couldn't get the truth from Maliki.
Can you believe this? I'll tell you what, I knew you was going to have this guest on today, so I did a little internet searching, and Truth Out has a real nice article on this. So somebody else.
Oh, good. Truth Out. Good.
Yeah, they got a real nice article. But can you believe that 25%?
And so they're talking about, well, let's give a third of it to the Kurds, let's give a third to the Shia, and a third to the Sunnis. We leave nothing for anybody.
Well, they got it taken right off. You know, they're going to take and chop off about, 10% for the crooks?
Yeah, of course. And did you know?
But that's going to leave the country with about 15%.
Well, and then in these production sharing agreements, they call them PSAs.
Yeah.
The home country where the oil is being pumped from, they are responsible for all the risk. So if anything happens, the pipeline's blown up, this happens, that happens, that's coming out of their money. The only place they do these PSAs, these production sharing agreements, is in countries where oil is extremely hard to extract from under the ground, or extremely expensive to get at. That's neither in Iraq. You can take a hammer and a chisel and punch a hole in the ground over there and get oil.
Imagine they could get to that oil in Iraq with a spade, couldn't they?
and you know, it's almost so good you could put it right in your car. It is light sweet crude.
Yeah, I mean, that's not some of this Canadian shale oil.
No. No, so that's the only kind of oil that anybody signs one of these production sharing agreements on. Not the best oil in the world.
That's your light sweet crude.
Yeah.
That's the stuff that goes right out of the ground into your, to refine it.
It's the best.
Yeah. I just can't believe this, Guy. I heard that there was an oil agreement, I don't know, maybe a couple weeks or sometime before Christmas, I heard that there was going to be some kind of oil deal, but I never really got into it until you talked about it on your show yesterday.
Well, you know, the terrible part about this is, Bill, you live in an industrial town, most certainly, at least it was. I don't know how much it is anymore. I could name a dozen big companies that were in Toledo, but a lot of them may be gone by now. But, Bush is going to be talking tonight about giving, this BS about, we're going to help them with jobs. We're going to give money for jobs.
Yeah, what was I think I heard some kind of figure of about we're going to give them like $1 billion, $200 million.
Okay. What jobs? What jobs? They don't have any money. There's no money for their economy. The American oil companies are stealing it all. And so what the hell? There aren't going to be any jobs.
Any of those soldiers, do they get like a mobile patch on their...
They should. They should get a mobile patch. That's a good idea.
A BP patch or something, or.
And you know, part of the problem is, Bill, I don't know how much people think about it, but there's 40% unemployment in Iraq right now. And you know what a lot of those guys are doing to make a buck? They're going out and making and setting off IEDs and killing our soldiers because they can't find any other way to make a living. I mean, this whole thing is, it makes me crazy.
What's these permanent bases? I wonder what those will be used for. Protect those oil fields?
You betcha.
And I imagine the United States government then will be reimbursed.
Well, sure. And this agreement that they're trying to get through the Iraqi parliament is contingent upon the troop increases that Bush is wanting to send over there. I mean, this is insane.
This is just like a fiction novel.
It is.
Something that you would read and say, oh, God, can you imagine if that would happen? Or, I mean, this is just like unbelievable. It's most unbelievable rape of a country I've ever heard in my entire life.
Well, it's estimated that they have 115 billion barrels of oil reserves over there. Figure that out. It's $60 a barrel right now.
I just read in this Truth Out 200 billion barrels.
Man.
I just got done reading the 200 billion barrels.
Wow.
This is unbelievable. You got to get that guest back on.
Oh, I will. I will. I know she this was
the subject. What's our Congress? Everybody's just saying, yeah, this is a great deal for us. We've given our soldiers our blood, and we've brought democracy to them. So this, we deserve this. Our companies deserve this. So
yeah.
We get this. We deserve it.
Well, you know, those Iraqis, they were living under Saddam, and now they can say, well, I'm free. I don't have a job. I don't have any money, and I fear for my life every time I walk out in the street, but I'm free.
Do we say in the summertime, oh, gas is down to $1.50 a gallon? Well, maybe this did work out for the best. Is that how we should feel, Guy?
It ain't going down to $1.50 a gallon. That's the beauty of it for the oil company. They got it all, and they're going to keep the price up.
Let you take some more callers, Guy.
Thank you, Bill. Good to hear from you.
Yeah, I was afraid to call you yesterday, so I'll just let it down.
I'm still alive. I'm still kicking. And I promise it won't be till I get off the air that I'll continue sobbing, okay?
I kind of thought better of it. You take care, guys.
Life goes on. Thanks, Bill.
Okay.
I'm going from one absolutely crazy subject to another in the next hour. Not right away in the next hour. Excuse me. Someday I'll get rid of this cough. We're going to have Rick Benrubi from the Florida Justice Association. That's the group of that's the Florida Trial Lawyers Association, and they're going to talk about we're going from one rape and pillage to another is what it is. We're going from the gas and oil companies raping and pillaging, and we're going to talk about the insurance agencies, insurance companies raping and pillaging here coming up. So. Do stay tuned for that. Oh, God. You know, that's one of those type of guests I have today that, you know, you think about things like that. And I'll be sitting there and if I can bear it, I don't know if I can because that SOB just infuriates me. The sight of him does. I can't stand the sight of him. But oh, if I watch that tonight, and if you watch that tonight, and you know the cuts will be on the networks of what he has to say and everything, I'm going to be thinking, you lying bastard, you standing there telling you're going to send 21,500 more soldiers and a lot of them to their deaths for your oil well friends. How could you do that? How could anybody do that? Think of the worst person you can think of in the history of the world. How could they do that? And there's been some pretty damn rotten people in the history of the world. But how many of them, and there have been some, a handful, that would do this? And you know who they are. Just group them together, a group of guys would say, well, hell, I don't care if 3,000 guys get killed as long as my oil well friends get make a lot of money. Stalin says, I don't care how many get killed if, you know, as long as I get my way. And, you know, hey, we're going to pause for the news coming up here in just a minute. And I'm going to settle down. And, well, you know, you're listening to the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network. We're going to have 5 minutes of news and be back with more of the Guy James Show.
This is the Quality News Network. President Bush will give a primetime speech to the nation tonight to announce he will send 20,000 additional troops to Iraq. He will also admit to the earlier mistake of not having enough forces to fight the Iraq war. The president will also acknowledge that the policy of having certain Iraqi neighborhoods off limits to U.S. forces was flawed. MSNBC reports the troop surge will cost $6 billion. President Bush also plans to spend $1 billion for Iraqi jobs and infrastructure. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has pledged to have a vote on the troop increase. Senate leaders also plan to hold a symbolic debate on the president's plan. Leon Panetta, a former member of the Iraq Study Group and President Clinton's chief of staff, says that the troop surge in Iraq won't work. In a Newsweek interview, he says, quote, all the troops in the world won't make any difference, end quote. In Iraq, a group of influential Sunni Muslim scholars is also criticizing the new U.S. strategy as ineffective. It predicts that many more innocent Iraqis will die as a result of the American troop boost. In and around Baghdad today, 60 bodies were found, the apparent victims of sectarian violence. 41 bodies were found Tuesday. In Tal Afar, a northern Iraqi city today, 4 people in a crowd outside of a police station were killed by a suicide bomber. 12 were wounded. The mayor's convoy was also targeted around the same time. A Somali official says that a senior al-Qaeda suspect was killed by a recent U.S. airstrike. The al-Qaeda target was wanted for the bombings of American embassies in East Africa in 1998. He was one of America's top targets in the global war on terrorism. Meanwhile, U.S. airstrikes in southern Somalia have gone on for 3 days now. In the southern Philippines today, 3 bombs went off within hours of each other. At least 6 people were killed and 27 were wounded. This weekend, the Asian Regional Summit will be held there. The House of Representatives is set to vote on a Democratic-backed increase in the federal minimum wage from $5.15 to $7.25 an hour. Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez was sworn in for his 3rd 6-year term today. He vowed to continue his country's transformation into a socialist state. He plans to nationalize Venezuela's power and telecommunications industries. And in Nicaragua today, leftist Daniel Ortega has taken office again. You're listening to the Quality News Network, science and business news coming up next.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and the victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of rancor. You got married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has banned smoking effective immediately in the Speaker's lobby off the House floor. She said, quote, the days of smoke-filled rooms in the United States Capitol are over, end quote. However, lawmakers may still smoke in their own offices. President Bush lifted the oil and gas drilling ban in Alaska's Bristol Bay. That also means the Interior Department can open up the more than 5 million acres to salmon fishing. The new law for tax write-offs now means donors must specifically itemize all items given to charity. The IRS will no longer allow guesstimates on tax forms. The internal advocacy group for the IRS says that the tax agency should stop using private agencies to collect delinquent taxes. The group told Congress that IRS collectors are better trained and more efficient. The holiday blizzard that shut down Denver International Airport cost Frontier Airlines at least $12 million, the carrier reports. Thousands of travelers were stranded and the airport was shut down for 45 hours. For the third month in a row, the U.S. trade deficit narrowed. The government reports that in November, American manufacturers sold more cars and airplanes to foreign countries, and Americans bought fewer products from China. Light sweet crude is currently trading at $54.10 a barrel. Taking a look at Wall Street this hour, the Dow is up 14 points at 12,430, the NASDAQ up 6, and the S&P 500 up 1. There's always more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Ali Dramoff.
Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life, do you hear me? Give my creation life.
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast.
Your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you've read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Hey there, back with you after the news. Hope you all went and got a tall drink and all relaxed and ready for the second hour of the show. I got myself calmed down, got another cough drop. Yes, I'm still relying on those cough drops. My God, when is this going away? Hey, you are listening to the Guy James Show, and you can give us a call, 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254. Coming up in about, about 8 minutes, we're going to have Rick Benrubi from the Florida Justice Association on to talk about this insurance ripoff we've all been going through down here. In the meantime, let's go to the phones, and we've got Mike from Texas. Hi, Mike, how you doing?
Hey there, Guy. I'll tell you something. I heard you the other day asking if I was softening up a bit, and I just got to tell you, I'm not softening up a little bit.
Well, Mike, you have to, or we're going to have to send guys in white coats after you.
Well, you're going to send them anyway, regardless. I was hoping I got to one of my customers because they actually have that Army Times poll. I think the poll is actually in each one of the military mag. There's four of them. There's Marine Times, Army Times, Navy Times, Air Force Times, and I think they're polls in all of them.
It's all the same publisher, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they, from what I could see from that, there looked like there's about 4,000 participants, and there were several questions that were asked, and whenever I looked through there, it seemed to be kind of a dichotomy. You know, on one side of the coin, you know, they're saying that they didn't like the way that the president's handled the war, but at the same time, you know, one of the questions was they thought we should be there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a dichotomy. It's kind of hard to understand what the poll's really trying to say, because you see some of the, and I mean, they got people from, you know, the enlisted man and woman up through some of the ranking commanders.
Let me ask you a question, Mike. We've seen the polls that 88% of Americans do not want more troops sent in. Do you think the Republican, the president should go against 88% of Americans?
Well, I don't believe that poll, but...
Mike, come on. If it was a conservative poll, you'd believe it.
No. what I think that they should do is turn the people loose and let them finish what they should have been doing.
You guys live in a bubble down there or what? I haven't talked to a single person, not one, Republican or Democrat, and I swear I'm telling you the truth, not one Republican or Democrat have I talked to in these past couple of weeks when all this has been hashed out has said that we ought to send more people in there. Not one.
You're talking to one now.
Yeah, that's why I asked you if you guys are living in some sort of a crazy conservative bubble down there.
What I'd like to see is them go in and win, and then we can come home.
Define that?
Kill the people that are trying to kill us.
And how many are there?
I don't know.
And where are they?
Do what?
And where are they? And who are they?
They're all over. And what I'm hoping is that what we're seeing in Somalia, where we went over there and aided those folks, and with Ethiopia going in there and taking back Mogadishu, you know, I certainly hope that we can continue to do those things and show the rest of the world, hey, if you're willing to stand up, we will come help you and we will help root this stuff out.
Well, so far the rest of the world doesn't seem to be all that afraid now, do they?
Well, it's because they know we're there and we're going to try to take care of it.
But the Iranians aren't afraid. The Syrians aren't afraid. The Al-Qaeda aren't afraid. The insurgents, the Iraqi people who want us out of their country, that are fighting us and killing us for no other reason than they'd like to have their country back. Nobody seems to be afraid.
Well, you know, but when you talk to the troops and, you know, their picture of what the Iraqi people want is totally different than what I hear on the talk shows and all.
You're not going to start that business again about the press, everything the press reports being wrong, are you?
No, but it's not all right either. What I hear from the troops
Do you listen to Michelle Malkin?
No, I don't listen to that. I know what it is. It's hotair.com, isn't it? Something
yeah.
like that. It's kind of appropriate name that I guess you would think. But what I hear from those folks over there is, of course, the Iraqi people want us to go, but at the same time, they're very glad that we're there.
Why? Why? What are we doing for them?
Oh, we're helping them get back
on their feet. Did you by chance hear the segment of the program right before the end of the top of the hour?
No, unfortunately, guy.
Boy, you wouldn't understand what kind of a swamp you're standing in right now if you did.
Well, I'll listen to it tonight, tomorrow.
You be sure and do that.
I will. You know I will.
You're standing in some nasty quicksand at the moment, my friend.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that you mentioned on your show was the million Republican idea.
Yeah, don't you think that's a good one, isn't it?
You know, as long as we extend that logic to everything else, no problem. You know, the taxes that I send to Washington, as long as I don't disagree with, or as long as I disagree with the program, I don't have to send my taxes to it, fine. You know, if we want to...
No, I didn't say disagree with it. I said that all the Republicans that have been gung-ho for this thing, let's do it, folks. Let's stop telling everybody that they're un-American, anti-American, and not behind the war and everything. Let's go. Let's show them. If we're good old Republican neocons and we think this war is a good thing, let's just show those daggone people that are against it, and let's all join up.
But the reason that you're saying that, guy, is because you disagree with the war, and it's one of those.
I would say that no matter what. It's a put up or shut up question, Mike.
Okay, well, then, I mean, extend it to other programs.
No. I'm not going to play that game. I'm talking about the war, Mike. I'm talking about the war. The war, the number one problem in the U.S. right now, number one, the war. The first thing on everybody's mind right now, not everybody, but most people, is the war. That's what we're talking about. We're not going to play that game of, oh, let's go play over here and let's go play over there. We're talking about the war.
What I want to see is the Democrats come up with a plan that it has to do with winning, and that's been absent from everything that I've heard. From any of the Democrats talking.
And I have not yet heard one Republican define what winning is.
Well, the president has. So.
Come on, Mike. Don't refer to him about anything. He's an idiot. You know it.
Well,
I know it. Everybody knows that he's nothing more than an idiot. He's not made one. I want to challenge you. I've asked everybody that's called, give me one thing that he's done for the greater good of the American people. One thing. For all the American people. One.
Just economy's pretty good.
No, it isn't. Not a chance. No, that's not going to fly. What has George Bush done? Any issue that he's put forward that has been for the greater good of the United States of America? Just one thing, Mike. One thing.
Tax cut.
Every American got a tax cut? I didn't get a tax cut. Did you get a tax cut?
Yes, I did.
And how much did it amount to?
A couple grand.
Oh, really? Well, then you must have a one hell of an income.
No, I have a couple of kids.
Okay. But the tax cut, Mike, it did nothing for the economy. It didn't raise revenues like they tried to say it would. We know.
How can you say it didn't raise revenue when we're taking in?
It did not. There is no linkage, Mike. You can talk to all everybody except Bush's favorite economist will tell you that there is no linkage between tax cut and a raise in revenue. It never has happened. Historically, it has never happened.
That is absolutely a crock, guy.
It is not a crock. It is not a crock. And I don't have time to talk to you about it right now because I have a guest I'm supposed to have this very minute. But I will give you the facts and figures that it has never, ever led to increased revenues because of a tax cut. Never. Never.
Well, one thing, I know you've got your guest coming up, and one thing that we will agree on, I agree with the Democrats on net neutrality.
Well, that's the least important thing of everything that's on the floor right now. But,
I know.
But you're going to hang in there and back Bush on the war, right?
I sure am.
Now you're one of, what is it now, 26%, 21%?
Yeah, that's what the polls say.
Okay. You what's the definition of insanity? Keep doing the same thing over and over and over again and hoping for a different outcome? That's where we're at, Mike. Hey, got to go. Thanks for the call.
Bye.
Let me see here. I better go to a quick break and call my guest. That's what I'm going to do. And I'm a couple of minutes late on that right now. I should know better than to talk to those people about that sort of thing, shouldn't I? I'll be back in just a minute.
Likes us, I don't know why. We may not be perfect, but heaven knows we try. But all around, even our old friends put us down. Let's drop the big one and see what happens. We give them money, but are they grateful? No, they're spiteful and they're hateful. They don't respect us, so let's surprise them. We'll drop the big one and pulverize them. Asia's crowded, Europe's too old. Africa's far too hot and Canada's too cold. South America stole our name. Let's drop the big one. There'll be no one left to blame us. We'll save Australia. Don't want to hurt no kangaroo. We'll build an all-American amusement park there. They got surfing too. Boom goes London, boom Paris. More room for you and more room for me. In every city, the whole world round, we'll just be another American town. Oh, how peaceful it'll be. We'll set everybody free. Wear a Japanese kimono, baby, Italian shoes for me. They all hate us anyhow. So let's drop the big one now. Let's drop the big one now.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at headonradionetwork.com. There's a link link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
Head on radionetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at headonradionetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Oh, yes. Hey, we're back with the Guy James Show. Glad to have all of you along with us here this afternoon. I'm a couple minutes late in getting to my guest, and I hope you'll forgive me for that. But I did explain during the break to him that I was having to deal with a radical right-wing phone caller. So,
hello?
And you can't do that in a moment or two.
All right.
Hi, Rick, are you with us?
I am.
Hey, welcome to the Guy James Show. First of all, let's get all the formalities out of the way. You're with the Florida Justice Association, right?
Yes, sir, I am.
And we're having you with us today to talk about a problem that is, well, as a Floridian, I can tell everybody, and we have talked about it at great length on this program, a crisis in Florida and probably all along the Gulf Coast, I'm not sure. About insurance problems here in the state. In fact, there are people leaving our state because of the price of insurance. And you have a bill that they're going to send up. Well, you're not involved with that bill, are they, with Citizens?
Right. We're not involved with the bill, but we do have certain reform initiatives that we think are important to level the playing field for the consumer and to bring some openness to the rate-making process.
Yeah, go ahead and take off and tell us what you're about and where you're going with this. And you can explain the problem a lot better than I.
Okay. The Florida Justice Association, interestingly, we just changed our name. We were the Academy of Florida Trial Lawyers, but we changed our name to better explain the purpose of what we do, and that is to represent consumers around the state of Florida for really any issue that affects them in their daily lives. You mentioned that there's a crisis regarding property insurance in the state of Florida, and there certainly is. And we don't claim to have all the solutions, but we have four or five initiatives, Guy, that we think will, like I said, bring some openness and honesty to the process, because we believe that insurance companies have not only been making profits over the last several, 10, 12, 15 years, but excess profits. And we think that it's time that that comes to an end and the consumers of the state of Florida see relief in their pocketbook. The first thing that we suggest is that an Office of Public Counsel be established to oversee the insurance rate review process and advocate on behalf of Florida insurance consumers. Now, we've seen in the state of Florida that with other regulated industries, such as the utilities, having an Office of Public Counsel where the consumers have a voice has served to stabilize rates and even decrease rates over time. So we feel that it's the consumer that pays the premiums, and they need to have a voice in this process.
Do you think our new Florida government is going to be fair about this? What with Charlie Crist and all getting $800,000 from the insurance industry for his campaign, is this going to be an issue that our new government's going to fight hard for?
Well, I think they are, and our new governor, Governor Crist, is certainly saying all the right things. And from what I've been reading in the press, he has his heart and his mind in the right place. I was just reading today where he said we have to take care of the consumers in the state of Florida. They are just getting hit too hard in the pocketbook, and that needs to come to an end. So politically, it's difficult for him to strike the right balance, but I do believe that he intends on doing whatever he can to ensure that our rates are going to start going in the other direction.
Sure. Well, I sure hope so. Relief is... relief has got to be close by. I have, and I'm sure you have, talked to many people who are saying that they're going to have to move out of here. They just can't afford the property insurance.
And back in 2003 with the so-called medical malpractice crisis, there was a threat or the realization of a lot of doctors leaving the state. And as you said, the same thing is happening here. You can have businesses that just cannot afford their insurance premiums and are going to have to leave the state, and that is going to damage the economic vitality of the state of Florida.
And it's been a healthy economy in Florida for a long, long time. How did we get to this point of being literally a gun at our backs over this property insurance now. How did we get to this point?
Well, we got to this point because a lot of the things we're suggesting are not in place. For instance, insurance companies in the state of Florida, as the current law is, do not have to seek prior rate approval. They can unilaterally raise their rates without those rates being scrutinized by the Office of Insurance Regulation. That's number one. Number two, we need to know that their justification for rate increases is actually present. We know in today's corporate scandal world of the Enrons, the Tycos, the MCIs, our federal Congress passed the Sarbanes-Oxley Act, which requires corporate officers to sign their corporate reports under oath and under penalties of perjury. We don't have such a thing in Florida. When they come in for their rate increases, they're not required to sign their financials under oath. So we do not know that they're being truthful when they say we're losing money and we need to increase the rates.
But isn't that like letting a fox guard the chickens?
That's what I think. That's what I think. And another proposal along the line of those other proposals is that the way the law stands now is that when there's a dispute over a proposed rate increase, the insurance industry can circumvent an open hearing in a court of law where the consumer can have a voice, where there's procedural safeguards, and they can go into a rate arbitration panel where you don't have those safeguards. So we feel like all of these proposals, and again, we don't suggest that this is going to be the end all that's going to solve all. It's a very complex, multifaceted problem, but we feel that these things will keep the insurance industry in check, will give the consumer a voice in the process, and make coverage more available, increase the competition, and eventually result in lower rates for all of us.
I'll just tell everybody a little anecdotal story here. I belong to a condo association, and it's a small condo association, and I'm one of the officers, and recently we went to property insurers in the state of Florida, contacted nine of them, and you know what we heard from them? Laughing. No, we won't insure you no matter what. We will not write your insurance. And I guess what I'm getting to with that point is what a lot of people here call cherry picking with the insurance, and I'm sure you're aware of that issue.
Yes.
Is there going to be any initiative to do something about that?
I think there is, and as you know, Governor Crist touted that during when he was on the campaign trail, and he is still talking about that. He indicates that is very important to him, and again, something like that would serve to increase the availability of coverage, let the free market forces run their course, and reduce rates in the long run. Insurance companies write some very profitable business here in the state of Florida. We're the fourth largest state. We're going to be the third largest state. We have a tremendous automobile insurance market. So, when we say cherry picking, that's exactly what it means. You shouldn't be able to cherry pick and only write the profitable lines and cancel policies and leave the state when it comes to property insurance. Insurance companies are in the business of risk. Sometimes you have good years, sometimes you have bad years.
Well, they want it all one-sided, and basically have for a good many years have had it all one-sided. Am I just misinformed, or have they done a lot of this sleight of hand by forming subsidiaries? Big companies forming subsidiaries and sending them into Florida, and then when the subsidiaries get hit with a hurricane like we had recently or so, they say, well, our company has lost a tremendous amount of money. When the subsidiary added into the mother company, it hasn't been much of a blip on the screen. Is there a lot of that going on?
There is a lot of that going on, Guy. You're exactly right. I just read some figures that despite the catastrophic losses because of the hurricanes that we all experienced in 2004, 2005, nationally, property and casualty insurance companies are making record profits, billions and billions of dollars like they never did before. But they have set up these Florida subsidiaries that they can go to the regulators and say, look how much money we're losing, and try and justify these rate increases. So, yes, that is a problem as well.
What kind of a timeline do you have on this? What kind of outlook for relief to the consumer in Florida are we looking for here? Are we a couple of years away or a few months away? What do you think?
I think we're a few months away. The Florida legislature is going to convene starting Tuesday to have a special legislative session solely dedicated to the property insurance crisis here in the state of Florida. I've heard chatter up in Tallahassee. In fact, I just got back to West Palm Beach today from a flight up to Tallahassee, and I hear that both the Senate, well, not the Senate, but even the House has some things in it for immediate rate relief, freezing rates, rate rollbacks, those types of things. And, California has been ahead of the curve. They passed these types of laws in 1988. And we're getting the numbers now, and the policyholders out in the state of California are saving tremendous amount of money. In fact, I believe State Farm just announced a 20% rate decrease for their policyholders in California. And, they don't get hurricanes, but they get earthquakes and mudslides and raging fires and, plenty of catastrophes going on there as well.
Well, 20% would be the difference for a lot of people. And,
absolutely.
I don't think a lot of people understand that people around the country that are listening right now, we've had insurance rates in this country, I can tell you, increased 6, 7, 8 fold. That's the sad truth of it. And it's to the point where a lot of people can't do it. Information on this, Rick, where can a lot of people find information? You have a website?
Yes, the Florida Justice Association. We just recently changed our name, so I would just type in Florida Justice Association. You could get some information there. That would be the best place to go for that type of information, Guy.
And so you're going to be back and forth. Your job, actually, you go up to Tallahassee and you're talking to our state legislators and our senators and so forth?
Yes, I am.
All right. Well, I hope you're able to twist a lot of arms and get them all on her. Let me ask you a question. You're probably in the Florida legislature. You're not probably running into a lot of objection to what you want to do, are you?
Well, anytime you're on the side of the consumer, you would think that you would not run into a lot of objection, but. The insurance industry is a very powerful lobby. They have a lot of friends in Tallahassee. So, you still run into a lot of roadblocks. But I truly believe that we have newly elected legislators. We have a new governor. And from everything I'm hearing up there, the climate is different. The policy decisions are going to be different. And I really think that the legislature this year is going to try and keep the consumer in the forefront.
Well, I sure hope so. I know how our state senator Dave Ehrenberg feels about it, and he's working hard toward a solution to it. And so I'm sure you'll get his cooperation.
He is truly one of the good guys.
Oh, he is. And to our listening audience, Dave is a Democrat, by the way. So I had to throw that in there. Well, Rick, I want to thank you very much for being on the program today. Gotten some insight from you about this whole thing, and I hope for the sake of Florida and Floridians and all the retired folks around that are living on fixed incomes and all that you can have a smashing success with this. And it sounds like you're very optimistic about it, and that's really good news to me, and I'm sure to our listeners as well.
Guy, thanks for having me. It was a pleasure. One more website, if your listeners are interested, is they should go to stormingmad.com.
Again, what's that called?
Storming, STORMING, MAD.com.
Oh, okay, well, that's fitting, because a lot of them are.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, Rick, thank you so much.
My pleasure, Guy.
Yes, indeed. We do have a crisis here in Florida. Terrible, terrible crisis on insurance right now. I mean, I'm talking really bad. And I hope we can get something done about it. It's not just Florida. It's happening all over the country. Insurance companies are just squeezing people. It's amazing, though. We'll talk to somebody here, that has a modest home in this area paying $4,000, $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 for homeowners insurance for a year. And I talked to my brother in Phoenix, who has a very nice home. He pays like $500. Wow. So a lot of you don't know how well you have it right now. So that's the price of living in paradise. But it's not paradise when you have to wonder where your next insurance payment's coming from, let me tell you. Hey, you're listening to the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network. You can give us a call, 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. And what do you think about that lying jackass, Tony Snow? Is he a piece of work or not? Did you get a chance to see his press conference yesterday? Oh, man. I mean, you know, let's face it. The press secretary for the president of the United States, almost all of them, are paid liars, paid spinners, you know, paid prevaricators, whatever you want to call it. Tony Snow, to me, I don't know. I like that little Nazi they had. The first one Bush had. What was his name? All of a sudden, I can't remember it. I even liked him, Ari Fleischer. Yeah. Now, Ari Fleischer, I thought was, you know, he made me curl my upper lip. But Tony Snow, he brings Fox Network. You know, that place has just turned into a political whorehouse, the White House says. They should strike the name off White House and call it Republican whorehouse, because that's what it is with the likes of George Bush and a Tony Snow in it. He stands before the public yesterday and tells a flat-out, bald-faced lie that if he had any intelligence, if he had any savvy into what's going on in the political world, he would know that we know it's a bald-faced lie and not try and get away with it. But let me, for those of you who didn't hear it, let me quote here what happened in the press conference. He got a question. I don't know who it was from. He said, Tony, this goes to your previous acknowledgement that the president is aware of public anxiety about the situation in Iraq. What would your guidance be to a public that has seen the president stand under a mission accomplished banner, proclaim an end to major combat operations, a vice president talking about the last throes? How should the public go into viewing this speech tomorrow, Tony? And Mr. Snowjob says, and I quote, I think the public ought to just listen. And he said this in a very condescending way. They ought to just listen to what the president has to say. You know that the mission accomplished banner was put up by members of the USS Abraham Lincoln? And the president on that very speech said just the opposite, didn't he? Tony. The White House, I don't know if you've caught this, but the White House already has admitted making that banner mission accomplished and putting it up. You see, it's not the Navy. A couple of years ago, Tony, the White, before you were there, or maybe before, I don't know what was wrong or where the hell you were on the planet, but the White House already admitted that they made the damn thing and had it put up. Not the Navy. Oh. And then he goes on to say that he said just the opposite of mission accomplished. He said it was the end of major combat operations, but he did not say it was the end of operations. Instead, he cautioned people at the time that there would be considerable continued violence in Iraq and that there would be continued operations for a long period of time. Tony. He inferred, he said it every which way but loose, that the war was over, Tony. That was the message he wanted to get out. I saw this and I thought, wait a minute. There's no hope for these people. There really is no hope for these people at all. Man, oh man. I don't know. Hey, and by the way, I want to thank our good friend Billy Shears, the music director for the Guy James Show, all the good music you hear on the program and so forth. Billy is responsible for. He certainly is, and he works hard at it. And he and I are on the same wavelength. He hardly ever sends me anything that I don't go, wow, yeah, that's really good. So, anyway, enough about Tony Snow. There, I get rid of that. I started to mention at the opening of the show today, and I got sidetracked, as you know I do all the time. But there's not a week goes by, but what I don't get, and we talk about this, but what I don't get a few nasty emails from right-wing extremists who claim that that we on the left are the angry ones, and we've always been the angry ones, and all that kind of BS, you know. And let me say right off, and yes, I am angry, and I've been angry for a long time, and it's my position that if you're not angry about the direction this country is headed right now, you are not a patriotic American. And, you know, but before the November elections, it was very apparent that this nation had been conquered. Yes, conquered. Not by some outside force, but from within. Our country had been captured by these people who traffic in hatred and fear and bigotry. And by all the Bush friends that are the war profiteers, the rich and the greedy. Hardly what the founders of this great nation really envisioned. You see, in my opinion, and I know in the opinion of so many of you because I hear from you so many times, the founders really did see a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. But Junior Bush and his people, they'd long since forgotten those great words. And I admit that at times, that especially before the election, that I had feelings of absolute hopelessness about all of this. But upon further reflection, I pulled back from that, what I could only call despair, and remember the past. And it's a good thing to do now and then. The good and glorious past of what we, the Democratic Party, the liberals, the progressives, if you will, what we've stood for and what we've accomplished over the life of these United States of America and our party. You see, we have history on our side, and it's a good thing to sit back and remember it now and then. For we are the ones who have led this nation to almost all of the progress that it's achieved. It's we who are the inheritors of a very, very proud past. And it's we who have, in my opinion, forever engraved the best and the brightest moments into American history. We have always been at the forefront of that struggle. That struggle for what's right and what's good for this land that we love. Oh, yes. I you know, the right-wing extremists claim to be the real America. But it's always we who have been the keepers of freedom and the light of Lady Liberty. The Bush administration, I watched the other night on TV, and they were flying a plane around the Statue of Liberty. And I must tell you, there are many emotions, person. I didn't come in to the country that way. I was born here, and none of my relatives ever came here that way. They were here long before the Constitution was ever signed in the Revolutionary War. My family came over here in 1685, so none of my family ever came through New York Harbor and Ellis Island and all. But one cannot be an American without looking at that Statue of Liberty and understanding what it stands for, and have a tear in the eye for all that it's meant to America over the years. And I watched that the other night as they were flying around doing a little travelogue thing on New York and New York Harbor and all the great things to see in New York City. And I felt bad. I genuinely felt bad because I think the Bush administration has snuffed out the light of Lady Liberty in New York Harbor. They've literally taken the torch from her outstretched hand and replaced it with a machine gun. They've cloaked her in military fatigues and they've thrown away her words, give us your tired, your poor, your huddled masses, and they replaced them with, do what we say or we'll bring down the wrath of our mighty military upon you till you submit to our will. That's the way they see it. But look back at history. We will make Lady Liberty whole again and make her the shining example of hope and liberty and goodness that it's always meant to the rest of the world. These right-wing extremists have taken to wrapping themselves in the flag, but it's always been we who have fought for the freedoms that that flag represents. And it's they who have twisted the Constitution But it's we who have straightened it out again, and we're going to do it again right now. And we've seen these dark moments before. When I think about this war, I think about Vietnam and the long, arduous fight for civil rights, the slavery of the cotton fields in the South, the burning crosses, the hanging trees of the Ku Klux Klan, the misery of the Great Depression, the fight for equal rights for women, the Nazis, Joe McCarthy. We've had all of those things to contend with, but we conquered every one of them because we've never weakened, we've never wavered, and we'll never surrender, and we never will. Man, when I think about these last 6 years, it would have been so easy just to give up and allow the slime of Republican corruption and greed and mad dog militarism to wash over us, but we stood our ground, you and me. And the November election proved that we can be victorious if we just stand arm in arm together for what's right for our country. And I know you'll continue to do it, and I will, and I'll get to the phone in just a moment. Just want to finish my thought. But it's always good to remember when you're feeling down about how the war is going and how the government's going, it's we who have been the ones who have overcome these terrible obstacles of foreign and domestic enemies. And it's we who have shared the vision and the faith of great men and women like Martin Luther King and Bobby Kennedy and Rosa Parks and Franklin and Eleanor Roosevelt and John Kent Kennedy and scores of others. We are now, and we always have been, the conscience of this nation. Because we're the ones that pulled her back from the confusion, from the abyss, time after time. And now we're ready and willing to do it again. And I can see it, and I can hear it, and I can feel it from all my friends, and our listeners, and our emailers. We're the thinkers. We're the visionaries. We're the believers in mankind, and we recognize what's right and what's good for our country. And if that makes us elitist, I'm guilty. So I guess my point is here, is that we should never allow ourselves to sink too low with despair over these current events, because we know we'll eventually triumph over this group of extremists who have temporarily hijacked this country. Somehow, some way, we, you and I, and our friends will end this terrible Bush war in Iraq. It won't be easy, because apparently our enemy, Junior Bush and his extremist allies, they're not going to give up easily. But know this, we will win out on this because history is on our side. You know it is. Let's go with the phones. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Yes, Guy, there have been times when we've had some great leaders in this country. It's Dave.
Hi, Dave. Yes, we've been fortunate to have some great leaders, especially at the right time.
Yeah, what's toughest for me as I look at what we've got sitting there now is my complete flat-out belief that they are there because they stole the elections. And even this last one, though we pulled it off, it's only because they miscalculated. We should have had 50, maybe 60 more seats in Congress than we've got because they miscalculated how many votes they needed to flip. They didn't expect a 45% turnout. They expected about a 29 or 30% turnout. So that, to me, is the toughest thing, to know that these criminals are in place because they stole our democracy to plant themselves in place to do what they're doing. That's, to me, the worst of it all.
Well,
I do wish that members of Congress were saying this and knowing this. They're not. They're not saying this. So,
tell me something, Dave. Do you think the Democrats would do the same thing?
No. No, I think what we got in the office now is an inordinate sociopathic, psychopathic group of criminals. These are people that you expect to find in prison. I think there are some Democrats that will cheat and but to actually steal the democracy and destroy a good country, no. I don't think there's many Democrats that could pull that kind of a thing. I hope not.
I hope you're right.
I'm sure there's a few that have their hand out and are willing to be bought. Oh, maybe many of them. But I can't believe the harm that these guys are doing to this country will devastate it for years to come, and they don't give a damn about us. I think they actually get their kicks causing immense grief. So,
well, we've got the bully pulpit. Well, not actually the bully pulpit, but we've got the reins to the horse right now, and I hope we can properly ride him. I hope our Congress is feeling the.
Well, it's got to be almost a daily thing for us to be calling these offices and saying
that's what it's going to take.
What we need, what we expect from the people we've elected to represent us.
Hey, and make no mistake about it, folks. They are hearing us, and if you want a perfect example of that, take note of how quickly Harry Reid made a complete 180 here a couple of weeks ago about sending more troops into Iraq. He literally changed his idea in what, 1 day, 2 days, but it was literally overnight.
Must have had the phones ringing nonstop.
They were. That's it. So you couldn't be more correct. That's what it's going to take.
And I think a lot of us, our feeling was what we need is a new Democratic leader of the Senate. Anybody that thinks like that is not speaking for us. And I guess he got the message.
Yeah, absolutely. He sure
anyway,
did.
Anyway, I always so much appreciate you telling it as clearly as you do. Wouldn't miss the show of yours if I had, no matter what I have to do to be here.
Well, thanks, Dave. If I got to be here, you got to be here.
Yeah, I got to be here.
Thanks so much for calling, Dave.
Thank you, guys.
And very quickly before I take the next call, I got an email from Blue Lady, and she knows who she is. She always sends me good stuff. And I was talking earlier in the program about PNAC shutting down. And yes, some of them have slithered away to other places. In fact, a couple of them for sure have headed over to the American Enterprise Group, and you know what they're about. So, maybe they're feeling some heat. Maybe they are. Let's go to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show. Hello.
Hi, Guy.
You're on.
Oh, hi, Guy. This is Laura from Michigan calling.
Hi, Laura.
Hi. I don't get to listen to you as often as I used to, but I still support you, and I just wanted to say amen to everything you've been saying. And I don't know if you've been talked a lot about what Biden said and was talking about on Sunday on Meet the Press, and it's kind of worrisome to me that he thinks he wants to be president.
Yeah.
But
that worries me a little bit, too.
I have heard that Al Gore has been thinking about running, and maybe it's because he sees who the candidates are that we were going to be running in 08, but...
Yeah, I think if Al throws his hat in there, and I don't know why we say that because none of them wear hats anymore. But if he does put his toe in the water, I think he might get a huge amount of support. I really do. I think that the reason his name isn't showing up big time in the polls right now is because almost everybody is thinking, well, he's not going to run and not taking it seriously. But I agree with you. I think he is taking it seriously.
I hope so.
Oh, I do too. I do too.
Yeah, he would be a saving grace, I think.
He would, and I just don't think a cross section of America really understands the devastation that took place with Al Gore not being our president back in 2000. I don't think it's hit a lot of people.
Right.
You know how much different things would be.
Well, you know they say you have to be conscious to keep in reality, and I think most people are just run their lives by being asleep a lot.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right.
And I'm not trying to condemn people because life is hard, and sometimes you just run it on habit, and you know you try to live your life. I know people have kids, and
oh sure,
lots of stuff they have to do with their life. But somewhere along the line, and especially when it comes down to voting, you know people have to be responsible. But then with the Republicans, we've got them fixing the vote everywhere. And this is what I really hope the Democrats at least get done for in the next 2 years, is get the vote so we can have one vote equals everybody's vote, not these machines and the way they're fixed. Because this is another thing I don't think people really realize is the amount of people who voted and came out so much that it swung everything in our favor, but we almost didn't make it. You know, I think things would have been much more. I think the tide would have been a lot more if those machines hadn't been fixed.
Yeah, I agree. I hope that's a problem that someday goes away, that we can get it solved to everybody's satisfaction. We shall see.
Right.
Thanks for your call.
Yeah.
Good to hear from you.
All right. Take care. Bye.
Oh, I had to hit the old cough button there. Man, oh, man, I'll be glad when I get rid of this cough. Just to give you an idea of what it's like if you're a show host, you get a zillion emails every day. And I got these clowns that keep sending me emails every day, almost not every day, but a couple of times a week, this outfit, and want me to interview some of their people. And I guess I should go ahead and do it. The American Conservative Union. Look at that up. Conservative.org. Here's a statement by America. They just sent this to me, and they want me to interview this guy. Statement by American Conservative Union's J. William Lauterbach on Democrats' symbolic vote. You know, the Democrats are planning on having a symbolic vote against this escalation. Not surge, escalation. And here are the words of Mr. Lauterbach. When it comes to fighting and winning the war against Islamic terrorists, liberal Democrats like Ted Kennedy, Joe Biden, and Nancy Pelosi seem more interested in symbolism than substance. Such is certainly the case with the utterly useless anti-war resolutions they are now proposing to place before their respective chambers. If these inane clowns were as committed to winning the war as they are to defeating George W. Bush at every corner, our troops on the ground in Iraq and Afghanistan would be in a much better position to succeed in their mission. Unlike liberals, conservatives will listen closely to what the president has to say tonight, because they're friggin' idiots. If he didn't say that, I did. If he calls for a major increase in the number of U.S. troops in Iraq, coupled with a no-nonsense battle strategy for winning, we believe a majority of Americans will support the mission. End quote. When donkeys fly. If they can now convince a majority of Americans that sending in these 21,500 new troops, 17,500 into Baghdad and 4,000 Marines out in Anbar province, if they can convince the American people, the majority of the American people, that this is going to be a strategy for winning, then I guess we should just hand them the keys to the kingdom and walk away, because they will have pulled off a magic act like I've never seen before. But then again, their media machine is pretty powerful, a lot more powerful than ours. But it's amazing to me that this executive vice president of the American Conservative Union, these inane clowns, if they were admitted, if they're committed to winning the war as they are to defeating George W. Bush. Well, you know what, Mr. Lauterbach? We don't have to worry about defeating George Bush at every corner. First of all, George Bush has nailed down his place in posterity. We don't have to worry about it anymore. He's done it himself, you understand. Let's go to the phone. We got time for one quick call. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, this is Juanita.
Hi, Juanita. We got about a minute and a half.
That's great. I just wanted to talk about some of the talk show people on the other side. Glenn Beck, he referred to the survivors of Hurricane Katrina as scumbags.
Right.
And he said he didn't think he could hate victims faster than the 9/11 victims. And this is the guy they just hired.
Yeah, ABC hired him for the morning show.
Good Morning America.
Isn't that something?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that. I think we need to bring these things out about some of these people. But
it's shocking to me that they would hire Glenn Beck for that. It really is.
And haven't they gotten very haughty, some of these people like him?
Oh, yeah.
It's like they know something we don't know, maybe.
Well, I hope they don't, but
I do, too.
We'll deal with them.
Maybe if they think they do, I hope they don't.
Yeah, exactly.
I just wanted to bring that up.
Thank you, Juanita.
Okay, have a good evening.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, that's comforting to know, isn't it? Glenn Beck's going to be on the ABC Morning Show. I guess any brand, any type of idiocy, craziness, hell, let them get Mike Savage on along with them. And then that lunatic, what's his name, Mike Gallagher. Put him on. Have put them on as a threesome. You talk about three bozos that are off Looney Tunes, completely off the scale. I'd like to be a psychiatrist and talk to those three boys. I certainly would. And I'm not throwing names at them because they've made their own bed and they can lie in it now. I mean, that's what they are. They're goofy. That's it. Hey, I'm awfully glad you joined us today. Had a couple of interesting guests. And we'll have the first one on again soon to talk about this oil theft by the Bush administration. And have fun. Get the popcorn out tonight listening to El Presidente spew his nonsense. And we'll talk about it tomorrow, about his legal authority to do what he's going to do. You're listening to the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network, along with music director Billy Shears. You've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth.